I do not have the luxury of assuming the obvious is true. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with instant illumination.
Hi.
I do not have the luxury of assuming the obvious is true. Why would anyone say they don't have the luxury of assuming the obvious is true? Because it would indeed be a luxury. For the obvious is very seldom true. What you think happened did not happen. What you think is going on is not going on. What you think is happening in life is really not happening. We cannot even begin to know the depth of these things that are going on inside of our consciousness and inside of our world. We have never had any idea of what it is. Now, they say out of the mouths of little children come great truths. How can great truths come out of the mouths of little children who have never thought about great truths, who have never even contemplated great truths? How can these great wisdom, this great wisdom come out of the mind, the mouth of little children? Well, I guess what you would really think about is, why would a child speak a truth? And a child would speak a truth because it's obvious. It's the natural, obvious, usual thing for it to happen. Now, why did the mouse run into the hole? Oh, the mouse ran into the hole because he wanted to go home. Yeah? Well, why did the mouse run into the hole when a snake is in the hole? It's going to eat it. Well, the mouse ran in the hole because it's his home, and he didn't know the snake was there. He didn't know the snake was visiting. Now, if a mouse runs in his hole and a snake is in his hole, will the snake eat the mouse? Generally, no. Because the snake cannot open his mouth wide enough to take in the mouse. And so quite likely, the mouse would have a perfect opportunity to get out again. Maybe the snake might take his tail or something, you know, but not the mouse, because the mouse is too quick for him. It turns on a flash and is gone and what have you. Now, what would a little child say about all this? A little child would probably tell you, in the most normal way, in the most simple way, the eternal truths. We, of course, we look at the obvious. We look at the mouse went in the hole, that's it. Snake's in there. Mouse doesn't have a chance. Then out comes the mouse dragging the steak. And you think, well, now that's an interesting
long
thing. That's an interesting turn of events, and that's what it is. Now, we might look at it from another point of view. We think how one speck of God's substance can cling to another speck of God's substance where it is not wanted. How dirt could cling to your clothing where it's not wanted. Well, that's our consciousness. That's our consciousness. I spoke about Rex and his fur coat, and he just shakes himself, and anything that he doesn't want just flies away. Now, if he's been in the mud and then so forth, it has to dry, and then it flies away. But what do we think? What do we think? We think the obvious is true. We think that you have dirty hands because you've been handling some dirty stuff. Now, Esther has been thinking that to have her hands touch the dog and then eat, that her hands are soiled. Whereas her hands are probably cleaner than they ever were because she touched the dog. What is there about a dog that is so clean? What is it about a dog that is so pure? Well, the dog's saliva, for one thing, is very pure. The dog's always licking himself and wiping off his coat and so forth. But aside from that, the dogs exude something out of their skin, which is a healing balm that is constantly flowing, just like the healing juices out of their mouth. Why do you think mankind has chosen the dog in his community? And he could have chosen the tiger. He could have chosen many other things. But the dog is a healing agent. And mankind chose that as a healing agent. Well, now, the obvious would be that the dog is very loving. Well, the dog is not really loving. The dog is very possessive of its own territory, of its own self, and so forth. And it's only when man feeds the dog and takes care of the dog that the dog recognizes the responsibility. Now, does every dog recognize the responsibility to his master? Not necessarily. And the reason that he does not is because the master did not show the dog love. If the master began to show the dog any love at all, the dog would be very supportive of the master. You can tell the relationship between a dog and his master by how they respond to each other, how they show love to each other, how they show respect for each other. Now, is this an indication of the obvious? If a dog loves a man, then the man must be an honest man. Not necessarily. That has nothing to do with the ethics of the man. Now, if the man feels guilty about it, then of course the man exudes this guilt, and the dog feels that guilt and doesn't want to be part of it. Now, the obvious would be, why does a dog turn on a man? Because a man is afraid of himself. He's afraid of the dog. He's afraid of the world. And so the world turns on him. Now, just as soon as you are at peace, stop and think about it. And I mean, really think about it. How many senile, decrepit old men and old ladies do you know of who have ever been hurt by a dog? None. If they were hurt, they were not senile and decrepit. They were outwardly doing some nasty things. But a dog protects the children and protects others. When does not a dog protect a child? When the child is showing aggression. When the child is just being a child, innocent child, the dog never attacks him. But when the child is taught aggression by his parents, then it, you see, these obvious things that are so so true and so obvious are not true or obvious. We have built up a case for them, and we think that that's true, and it really isn't. Now, what's the obvious truth of our ability to reach into the ultimate and know all truth? What is the obvious truth about that? That we can know everything. Can we know everything? Can we know all things right now? If I ask you a question, whatever it is, could you answer it? You laugh. And you see, right then and there, you broke down the communication. Because you shouldn't laugh. You should be so definite and positive as to what you believe that you don't laugh one little bit at something that's ludicrous. You don't laugh one little bit because you don't know. You don't know that that is all available to you. All knowledge is available to you. All wisdom is available to you. It's up to you to claim it and know it. Now, are you going to do it?
Yes.
All right. How do you go about knowing the truth and not just the obvious? What's the biggest city on earth?
Tokyo.
I'm sorry?
Tokyo.
Tokyo is the biggest city on earth? Look it up once. How big is Tokyo, do you think? No, how big is Tokyo? I think Mexico City is. Because Mexico City doesn't have any suburbs. See, Tokyo is loaded with suburbs. And so,
including suburbs.
Well, you can't. I mean, Tokyo is Tokyo. Now, if the greater metropolitan Tokyo, if we said that, that'd be a different thing. Then quite likely it'd be quite large, you know. But look up populations, and you will find that. And the thing is, why is it that we presume just because Tokyo is such a condensed, populated area in a small area that it is so great? It is probably great, but why do we think that? Maybe Moscow, in its greater area, is even greater than Mexico or Tokyo. But we cannot take the large metropolitan area unless we say it. Then we have to take that for everywhere, okay? And in Mexico, the metropolitan area goes from border to border. But again, the obvious true, what is obvious is true, is not necessarily so. And you don't find it by the word population. Is that correct? Is that correct?
I found what is there, but I have to look the listing of the biggest cities.
I see. Okay. Now, we have given ourselves a lot of things in life that we have thought was obviously true, and then we found out that it wasn't. Now, does it rain cats and dogs? Has it ever rained cats and dogs?
No, never.
Well, in medieval times, they had straw roofs on their houses. And sometimes the cats and dogs would go and live in the straw roof. Uh-huh. And when a great downpour came, it would wash the cats and dogs right out of the roof, and it would be raining cats and dogs, symbolically from that point of view. That's where the phrase came from.
One Tokyo, two Mexico.
1 million Tokyo and
no,
two...
rank one Tokyo.
Let me see it if I may. Okay, now, Tokyo is the first in rank. But let's see what it says here. Its population is, oh my goodness sakes, 26 million. And Mexico City is 18 million. And Marumba, India is 18 million. And Sao Paulo, Brazil is 17, and New York is 16. Interesting, huh? Mm-hmm. So Tokyo is the first.
Right.
Which is almost double anything else.
A lot.
Yeah. So, now, why did Sylvia back off when I told her that Tokyo might not be the greatest populated city in the world? Why didn't Sylvia just said, I know it is the greatest populated city? Because she did.
She did.
She did, but she was afraid. She was afraid to be wrong. And you see, this is what troubles all of us. We're afraid to be wrong. And because we're afraid to be wrong, we're not right. We don't say what is really in our heart. Now, 26 or 28? 26 million people.
18 is...
26, 444,000 million people. 26 million. That's a lot of people. A lot of people in one jurisdiction, in one community, under one government. I mean... How big is the rest of Japan if Tokyo is just that big? Because there's some other big cities there. Lots of other big cities. Now, that's amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that tell you? After the Second World War, Tokyo had no problems.
Wow.
It did not have any war to prepare for. It didn't have to prepare the military. All of its money went into... creating its own industries, automobiles and watches and what have you. And people worked hard, but they had spare time. And what was their spare time in? Manufacturing children. Because they had to rebuild the population. And so I'm sure, as they did in China for a long time, they gave people awards for large families. Because they wanted large families. And then they began realizing that the families were starving. Because they just could not have the money. Now, we would think that Tokyo would not be the largest, because it is in such a small island community, and has only so much space upon which to build, and the people live up and down the mountains, And they don't have a lot of high rises for the people. They're getting them, but they didn't for a long time because people lived in every type of building that there could be. But what was it that stimulated the population growth of Japan most? What would you say? I would say the government. The government wanted more people. The government wanted more workers. The government, because during the war, they had decimated their population pretty heavily. And so they wanted more people. So the government gave them tax write-offs and all sorts of things to have more children. Well, now they have lots of children. Now, in all the hearing that you've heard from all over the world, where is the overpopulation the most devastating, the most difficult?
In India.
Yeah.
In India and Mexico.
Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Now, they're the second and third. But why wouldn't it be in Japan, where it is double what any of these other countries are? The one city is double, you know, and it's absolutely amazing. Now, the government is working with the people. The government helps them to have everything. And from the looks of the people on the street and so forth, they all got a cell phone. And they've all got toys. They've all got all these things because they got jobs. Because they got jobs and they're earning good money. And what's another thing that the Japanese have done? They have mandated higher education for all their children. They have demanded that all of their children be highly qualified. Because you can have some lowly qualified person with a good charisma become the chancellor.
Mm-hmm.
And they want whoever becomes the governmental heads to have the best education possible. And they don't know who that's going to be. They don't know one minute to the next. And so they did their best to provide a good education for everybody. This is what most militaristic countries do for their people. They make sure that the people have a good education because they know they're going to draw upon them to operate their country. So I do not have the luxury of assuming the obvious is true. I cannot assume that just because you have a great population that you are poor, because the greatest population, Japan, is not poor. And I cannot assume that just because you have a great population that you are successful. Because you look at a lot of these nations that they talk about here, and they have a lot of people, and there are a lot of them that are living in poverty. A lot of them that the government is just not really caring much about. In São Paulo, Brazil, the fourth largest, what are they doing? They have virtually a sham government with the people living on the streets and children abandoned by their parents because their parents couldn't afford to keep them and just let them go wandering, you know. It's amazing. It's really amazing. The obvious is not true. What's going to happen to São Paulo? São Paulo is going to be one of the great cities of the world because the people will not put up with poverty. They will not put up with limitation. They will not take the obvious as being true. They will reach out and prove it.
Mm-hmm.
All they need to have is one fabulous, charismatic leader, and he'll just walk away, or she, just walk away with the country in a beneficial way for them. So this is where we live. This is what we're doing. And none of us have the luxury of assuming that whatever we see is true, because that is not so. Well, think about those things. There's a lot more to think about. Have a lovely day and know that I love you very much. I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.